It was a cool blue morning. Later, at dawn, which was coming too fast, Amy wasn't ready yet to face the day. Sunlight would layer the sky into swaths of paler blues, grays, pinks. But not now. Now, the whole world, or at least her ludicrously perfect patch of it, was encased in a clear, inky gel, an atmospheric snow globe, seemingly flawless. Amy had just been awakened by a tactile hallucination, sensing her phone vibrating minutes before the alarm actually was set to go off. She'd grabbed it from her nightstand, saving Dan that juddering, hand-buzzery sound, a gag that came daily, like Uncle God's worn-out prank. These days, her nights comprised marathon hours of lacy sleep, in and out of dreams so wild and disturbing, the interruption by her own inner alarm clock could be viewed less as a textbook case of conditioning, Pavlov's wake-up call, and more accurately, as an act of self-preservation. She moved Dan's open laptop carefully off his belly, closed it, and set it down onto the cream-colored cut-pile carpeting on her side of the bed. Dan must have fallen asleep while updating his LinkedIn file. Back in the day, when he first started out in newspapers, ha-ha, he often conked out while writing on yellow legal pads, and Amy had had to pry the pens out of his hand. The attic still held several ink-stained coverlets documenting that period. Time capsules. So last century. Quietly, she slipped on a pair of running tights and exited their bedroom. If she tiptoed down the stairs and kept Squidward, their psychotic Vishla, from barking, if she put on the sneakers she'd left to air outside the back door, she could hit the ground running. She'd circle around the faculty ghetto, following the campus blue lights like breadcrumbs, then up into the hills. She'd head for the dish, an old radio telescope that probably sort of functioned, sitting close to the top of one of the highest local gradients. If she were in luck, as she ran, she'd see the fog lift and the light of day do the lifting. On a clear morning, the view was all the way to San Francisco. Amy didn't have time to do the whole 7-mile loop today. Thing one and thing two, as they referred to the little boys, they were idents. Had to be hauled out of bed by 6:30 if any of the stuff that needed to happen before they went to school was to occur. The corralling of homework, clothes, toothbrushing, deodorizing poor little Theo, thing two, who, on top of the rest of his issues, appeared to be showing signs of way early puberty, while Miles, his exact replica, had not a solitary hair where it counted, nor a single one of Theo's hurdles. Amy poked a nose in their room before shutting the door carefully. No signs of life in the trundle beds. Same mop of carroty curls exploding like a burst of fireworks on each pillow. Always a surprise. Both she and Dan had dark hair, although recently Dan's was shot through with silver, as though he'd stuck his finger in a light socket and it had been electrified. She supposed, in a way, he had. Then she moved down the hall to check on Jack. In her oldest boy's room, Lily was the only one up, still lounging in bed, her loose blonde ponytail fanned out seraphically against her flowered pillowcase, blue eyes so bright they startled, black mascara melting prettily beneath her lashes, daisy-eyed. Jack's girlfriend. She and Amy waved to each other via Skype, Jack's laptop permanently open on his desk, angled toward his bottom bunk. Lily lived in Texas now, although she was a constant presence in Amy's household. She'd moved 2 years ago, 2 weeks after the kids began dating, and slept under a fluffy pink duvet, surrounded by stuffed animals, a photo of a calla lily framed above her bed.